On Tuesday, actually, we had our introduction to kinetics versus thermodynamics, and right at the end, I squeezed in some information about what you're actually doing in this lab. To just very briefly summarize, you're making two different carbonyl derivatives, a derivative known as a semi-carbazone. You're doing that with two starting materials, and what you're going to do in part A and part B is to make those two different derivatives individually, and then you're going to have a competing reaction where the reagents used in part A and B are combined. That's what you're doing in part C. And what you're trying to do is figure out which of those products is formed under kinetic control, which happens at lower temperature, and which one is formed under thermodynamic control, which is what happens at elevated temperature. You're analyzing everything by melting point. And so the part of it that I want to talk about today is just taking the melting points. We'll talk about the interpretation on Tuesday when we're not all worried about the exam. So melt temps. Do we have, we've got one new person. Have you ever used a melt temp before? It's a little box that's got kind of a tower on it that has a light. Yeah, okay. So you've used that kind of thing. And everybody else has done a melt temp, right? There's no one else. So some reminders about the melt temps, the way they work. They do have this heating element that's down at the bottom, but it's quite a bit distant from where the sample's put in, where the temperature is measured. And so there's a time delay that occurs between you having it set at a certain temperature and what it's going to register as. So that time delay is due to what's called thermal equilibrium, or it will achieve this thing called thermal equilibrium, where all parts of that apparatus are at the same temperature. The reason this matters is because I know that melting points are boring. You have to sit there and watch and wait and watch and wait and watch and wait. But if you were to turn the temperature up too high, then you're going to end up having an artificially low reading by the time your sample melts. Because if you were to, for example, turn that all the way up to begin with, the heating element, then that gets really hot at the bottom and that heat starts to radiate out. The sample is physically lower than the thermometer is, or even if it's not, the thermometers unfortunately don't have a very good tight fit with the melt temp devices. And so it takes, there's a lag there for the thermometer to heat up to the same temperature as the device right around it. So the heating element gets hot, that heat radiates up, your sample could melt. The sample's melting point doesn't change, the real melting point. But because that's not in thermal equilibrium with the thermometer, when it melts, the thermometer won't be as hot yet, and so you get an artificially low temperature. And so ideally, with a melt temp device, you're supposed to heat it up just 1 degree a minute. But if you had something that melted at 150 degrees, for example, that'd be 2 hours, 20-something degrees room temperature, add 100 degrees to that, almost 2 hours. But we can cheat a little bit because we can get a rough melting point. We do go ahead and turn up, maybe not all the way up, but turn it up to a fairly significant temperature. And unfortunately, I can't tell you what setting to put on the device because I don't know if they're even consistent, or even if they are, I haven't done it myself enough to know what settings achieve which temperatures. But the first time that you do a melting point measurement, you can put that setting, go ahead and let it heat too quickly. You know that whatever temperature you get is going to be lower than the real melting point. So you then make a fresh sample, let the melt temp cool, not all the way down to room temperature. There's no reason to. Not if you're going to remeasure the exact same sample again. You have to make a new sample. Light's going to go out. But just cool down the melt temp to just below the melting point you got, because again, that melting point is artificially low to begin with. So you get it down to that temperature and then slowly heat back up. You won't have nearly as many degrees to go through, and you can still be more careful when you reach the exact melting point. I know this is what I described last quarter when we did do our one melting point. Does anyone have any questions about that? Then how does this work in practical terms? Well, you might remember that the melt temp actually has three little chambers in the sample holder. So you can prepare three different samples and monitor all three at the same time. You could look up, in fact, does the text give you what the melting points for the pure compounds, the cyclohexanone and the furaldehyde, their derivatives, does it tell you what those temperatures are?
Not a procedure.
Okay, so I could try to do an internet search to see if I can find those temperatures or not, or since you all are pretty internet savvy, if any of you happen to come across those temperatures, I'll even put up the board so we know what kind of our targets are. But one of the compounds is going to have a lower melting point, one's going to have a higher one. I do remember that. And there is a fair difference in those melting points. I want to say it's at least 30, 40 degrees or something like that. All the mixtures you get are going to show up mostly in between those two temperatures. Next time when we talk about the interpretation, we'll run through again what melting point depression is and why it occurs in a mixture of different solids. And it is possible that by taking one solid and putting another in it, you get a melting point that's lower than either of them. But if you have a significant enough proportion of each of them, and if there's a vast difference in their melting points, then you can end up mainly with melting points between the two temperatures of the individual pure compounds. So you're going to make A, you're going to make B first, most likely, and then one of your runs of C, one of the temperatures you could do. There's three samples right there. Put all three in, do the rapid heating. One of the three is going to melt first. Write that temperature down. Let it keep on heating up. Get the second temperature, whichever sample that happens to be. Let it keep on heating up. Get the third temperature, and so you have your three rough temperatures. You know that the lowest of them is lower than what the real melting point of that lowest sample is. So cool the melt temp down to that level. Make a fresh set of samples. The reason you have to make a fresh set of samples is, although it's not likely in this case, it is possible to have a substance that has a certain molecular configuration that causes it to have a certain melting point, but once it melts and the molecules are free to move, they can arrange in a different pattern, which might have a different freezing point, and therefore a different melting point if you were to remelt that same sample. So just to make sure that we're not having that kind of effect at all, that's why each time you make a fresh sample. Does anybody need a quick reminder about how to make the samples? You're all familiar with the single open-ended capillary and the fact that the closed end goes down so you don't melt stuff into the melt temp device? Okay, just making sure. I know this is 12B, you've probably done lots of melting points, but gotta ask. So you'll have three samples, you'll get the three melting points, rough ones cool down below the lowest of those, then more slowly, more carefully go up through, up to the, again, when all three samples melt. You'll then only have, I think it's three or maybe four more samples. So you'll only need to do one more round of that melt temp procedure because you'll have three different temperatures of part C that you're doing. And then part E, I forget, are you doing one reversible reaction or two? In other words, are you taking the cyclohexanone semicarbazide and putting it in furaldehyde and taking the furaldehyde semicarbazone and putting it in cyclohexanone? Mm-hmm. So you do both versions. So that means you're going to have four more, so you'll have to do three or two more rounds after your first three samples. Or it's fine for you to share melt temps. Like if you've got one sample and your person next to you's got two, then it's just time efficiency. You're not cheating per se, just time efficiency for you to both stack onto one melt temp device. All the melt temp samples you make can go into the organic waste. Glass is if we classify it as a solid, it's allowed to go in a container labeled as liquid. And then we're not doing IR or NMR of any of these samples, even if it says to. We are just doing melting point analysis of this. So once you are confident you have your correct melting points, then you can just toss your samples. Make sure, if you are at all concerned that whatever solids you prepare are not dry, leave it for next time or leave it for the end of today as long as you can wait. to really let those things dry out. Because since we're doing melting point determination, a wet sample is going to give you a totally bad result, give you the wrong answer for the lab. This is usually a pretty reproducible lab, so you all should get the right results, but only if you do make sure that your samples are dry before you try to take their melting points. Now let me think if there's anything I'm leaving out. Does anyone have any questions what you need to be doing? I mean, I know that you might still, it's understandable, you're totally focused on Vitig, Grignard, all that stuff right now. So conjugation and semi-carbazone, you don't give a semi-care about it right now. So if you don't understand what the point of the lab is, that's okay at the moment. There's always next week. But if you don't know what you need to be doing, if you're just sitting here kind of like this, does anyone have questions what you need to do? Yes. No, okay, that was a good question. This lab, because of the tiny quantities involved, because of the possibility of product loss, and because all we care about is getting enough sample just to do a melting point, don't need to do percent yields in this lab. Let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8. I hope so. Yes, yesterday we had quite an assortment of circulatory problems with the building. At one point, I had to really and truly lean into that door to be able to get out, which made me worry that if we had a fire, how we're going to get out of the room. So that was interesting. And then the opposite problem happened, where if this door was open, you literally got like a 20-mile-an-hour breeze of the air coming out of the room. So it went one way and then the other and then back, and then the vacuum was up and the vacuum was down, and beep, 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 beep. So let's see. That was a YouTube open right there, wasn't it? No, we don't have vacuum, so I will go. Shit knows me without even having to ask who it is anymore. I'm going to call again to get the vacuum turned on. Any other questions? So you all get your goggles on. I'll go get the vacuum on.